Dimp Digital presents Idle Game Chat.
Cool!
Another episode of Idle Game Chat here at Dimp Digital. This is a quick intro to this current episode, a special episode really. It is going to be our Game of the Year shortlist and or winners. So you'll get a list of nominations and we'll talk about those in not a great load of detail, but a little bit, and then announce what our official winner was as per the votes that were carried out amongst the Dimp Digital crew. Now it's a special episode because we've actually got on our annual guest for this particular show, and it's that man, it's Hall, who only comes out once a year. Sometimes he does the quiz, to be fair, so twice a year, but in terms of a standard sort of podcast talking about games and not competing, he only comes out for this particular episode, so it's a special one. And I will stop waffling, hand back over to myself, and we'll see you on the other side for Game of the Year 2023. Here we are then, Game of the Year 2023. Coming to you nice and early in April of 2024. Might be the latest you've ever done it.
Boys. Yeah, this is poor from us, to be fair.
Well, I like to give people a chance to catch up on stuff, but they never do. Like, very, very little gets done between January and sort of March, which is the normal timeline. And I thought I'd give people an extra couple of weeks, and it's put us behind schedule. But we're here now. People have been waiting for this Hall's annual appearance.
Yep.
On the podcast.
One sometime, done, mate.
Well, used to turn up onto the quiz, but scheduling conflicts have cost him his shot at glory for a couple of years.
It's annoying as well, because every time I listen to that quiz, I'm just like, I'm so thick. It's so bad every year.
It's a pretty poor standard. But that's what happens, unfortunately. You've got Adcock running around with his plaque, claiming he's the most knowledgeable now.
Unbelievable.
With like scores of like 13 out of 23.
It's like, right. Getting one a month and being happy with it.
It's unbelievable. But this is Game of the Year 2023. So last year's lot. We've got six what we'd call nominees, I guess, and then there will be a winner at the end. And we'll have a little bit of a break between the sort of six chats and the actual announcement of the winner. Don't think we'll labour it too long, but we'll see what we get to. I've got them in alphabetical order here. I was going to do it in release date order, but then couldn't be. That's an extra bit of.
Well, I've got them in release date order if you want to do it like that.
Let's do that. Start from the newest backwards.
Yep. Clever. Clever. Reverse chronological.
Yeah.
So are we going to do the first release of all of them?
Yeah,
of our nominees, which was on the 28th of April, 2023, Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Yes, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Respawn Entertainment. This is a sequel to Star Wars Jedi.
It's a sequel to Titanfall.
Yeah, well, that's what we all wanted off Respawn, and we got fucking Apex.
There was.
So I think there's still a chance that we see a Titanfall 3, but to be fair to them, we played Titanfall OG quite a bit.
Loved it.
And then none of us played 2.
No one touched number 2. No. Yeah. So absolutely got binned, didn't it? So you can't blame them.
No, they looked at that and went, well, we did it and you all just crapped on it. So.
Crapped on it.
But yeah, I mean, Respawn have been pretty good for EA, who are a bit up and down as a publisher.
Very much so.
Definitely, I would say Respawn are the crown jewel in there. And yeah, and Survivor is... Was it Fallen Order, the first one? I think it was Fallen Order. That's what it was called. Yeah. This is the sequel to that, so the story kind of carries off and continues with that. Sitting on an 84 on OpenCritic, which is kind of what we use for the critical response, so not like high 90s or anything. I must say, I'm a little bit surprised that the reception is that high, almost. And that's not, as I said, that's not an astounding score, But given how widely reported the technical issues were for the game on like literally every platform for a long time,
yeah,
I'm surprised it kind of got through that. And even Biff, in his very own words, said, "I don't know how it's left the factory in that state." So I'm not sure how it managed to do it. The game itself clearly is of quality, but usually the technical issues cost these games out of the gate. You sort of, you get a snapshot of it. It was the release date window, and if it's if it runs like trash, then you've had it. But I think the Survivor has gotten away with this to some extent.
Yeah, it's funny because I mean, every year I harp on, for me, gameplay in terms of, you know, performance is more important to me than stuff like the graphical appearance of games and bits and pieces. But looking across the whole list of six, there is at least three games out of our six that we've chosen that have all suffered with some kind of performance issues on some platform. Evidently, maybe too, it's less of a factor than I've perceived it to be. Because when this came out, like you say, initial release, which is generally when most of the reviews take place. I know some people, you know, once it's had patches or whatever else, will go back and update reviews. But I don't think a lot of people bother. Most just seem to stick with what the original thought was.
Yeah.
And this was in a fucking god-awful state initially, like when it first came out. It was borderline unplayable in certain areas of the game.
Yeah. It wasn't very good at all. And I do wonder if sometimes... I mean, I heard a story that Days Gone... And what was it? What game is it? And essentially, the day one patch made the game worse. And this is for other games where the reviewers have got through it and it's actually not too terrible. They're like, oh,
yeah,
you know, it's a bit stuttery hearing it, but something they do on day one completely ruins it. And I wonder if that's what happened here. Because after the game release, all you could see on the internet and the videos were...
It's just clips of... Yeah.
Yeah, look at the state of it.
Yeah.
It's running absolutely really awful. Cool. And then Master Race... it's like a 50% chance that a PC port's going to run like absolute AIDS for 6 months. And it may be forever, maybe it never gets sorted, but this was another one of those. And not quite Cyberpunk levels of disaster. We must not over-egg it too much, but still not ideal.
I mean, the thing is, like looking down at nominations and bits and pieces this one had for the awards and stuff, this game on the other end of the spectrum did something that all Star Wars games seem to consistently get right, which is the sound and the feel and the looks of the game were spectacular. Logan harps on about it a lot with a Star Wars game, that it feels like you're in one of the films.
Yeah.
And I think this one best soundtrack at the Grammys and things, it's just like, this was obviously a game that had its strong points. It's just, like I say, just given how poor the performance was. I mean, it's testament to it, to patches that came out to make it into... I mean, obviously, like I say, Biff was its biggest critic when it first came out, as you mentioned, and then he was one of the people that nominated it to put it forward for Game of the Year. So, you know, for him to do a complete 180 like that, given how small his brain is it must have done something right, mustn't they, in fairness to him?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the first one. So the reason for this scoring pretty well and, you know, building upon that as a sequel is something I'm definitely interested in. I want to go back and see old Cal Kestis, is it? Mm. And continue his story. But what put me off was the initial kind of performance. I was like, I can wait for this, because it was, we'll probably get into it later, there was just a slew of games all year that were just being pumped in from every seemingly every genre possible.
Yeah.
And this was one of the casualties, and it's like, well, we can wait and see on that. I think it's on Game Pass now, and if it's not, it will be very shortly, because that it will go onto the EA Access vault where it'll be available. But yeah, a nice expansive sequel building on what was a good to great kind of Star Wars game. I mean, EA have had a pretty terrible record with Star Wars games. They had that 10-year exclusivity period, and they shitted out those fucking Battlefront games.
Yeah.
And this was like one of the last games. The Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order was like one of the last games as part of that. And I was like, oh, finally they've got one. But it's good to see Star Wars not being held hostage by EA anymore. And
yeah,
yeah, I mean, the Jedi and then Survivor itself kind of, it uses a lot of ideas from other games like Metroidvania style kind of progression, souls like experience points, respawning of enemies when you rest at a quote unquote bonfire. So not highly original in its thought process, but a very sound, and I don't know, sometimes just changing the playground of certain games makes it more appealing, doesn't it? We talk about Star Wars itself being, I mean, I don't care for much of the new stuff in the TV or the maybe even the film world these days, but games, I'm always up for jumping into a Star Wars game, and I think that rings true for many people.
Yeah, the nostalgia factor is always going to be there for a game like this, especially when, as I mentioned, the kind of look and feel and sound of the game is always something they do historically so well at. So, yeah, I expect a lot of people were probably in a similar situation to yourself, that because there was such an abundance of games that were planned for last year, it was one of those ones that, yeah, okay, it's not great at release. All right, well, we'll give it a while, see what happens. And slowly as those negative clips and bits and pieces of stuff going wrong disappeared, where they'd obviously fixed it through patches and bits and pieces, I think a lot of people were in, like I say, in a similar situation to yourself, that picked it up later in the year, had a bash at it, and actually went, well, yeah, underneath, this game's pretty awesome. It's just been spoiled at release by performance. But now that's fixed, great game.
Time to jump in. Anything in the Star Wars kind of universe, if we call it that, is there anything, any genres you want them to touch on that they haven't done or bring back, like an old pod racer or something?
I mean,
like
it's
that.
Hard, isn't it? You get the old nostalgia factor. Like, I loved, I've always, as everyone well knows, I'm a big Nintendo fan, so I was a big fan of Rogue Squadron and Rogue Leader on N64 and GameCube, as well as Pod Racer. Pod Racer was a nothing game, but it was kind of fun for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, everyone always says it. I'd like them to do like a Rogue Squadron style, you know, space battling arena or something. But at the same time, sometimes it's let sleeping dogs lie, isn't it? And don't fuck up the nostalgia of a great game that I enjoyed in the past. Like, don't try and recreate it and then make a complete pig's ear of it, and then people go back to the original and realise that that was actually garbage as well, because it's fucking 30 years old now. Just, sometimes I'm more of a, just let it die now. Let it dry up. You know, how long are we going to milk this horse for before we move on from it? I mean, now that Disney's got hold of Star Wars, that ain't fucking going anywhere for the next... No. I mean, they really will milk it to the absolute fucking max. I expect more games in the future that come out that tie into whatever fucking Disney choose to do with it next. But there's always going to be people that buy it and always going to be people that play it. It's because of the name. As soon as you put Star Wars in front of it, people are going to be all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the closest thing we had to sort of a Rogue Squadron was that Star Wars Squadrons, I think they just called it.
Yeah.
Which seemed
we
to
played
get...
that for a bit.
Yeah, any good or not?
Well, it was all right. It was harmless enough, but I mean, space, like, I was playing it on mouse and keys, which is never a good idea. Like,
need your joystick out.
Yeah, you need a controller or a joystick or something. But yeah, I mean, fun enough, but exactly as I said, like, never quite created the same feel as Rogue Squadron did. And maybe that's because Rogue Squadron I was playing 20 years ago when I was at school, and everything seemed like, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I'm flying a ship in space.
Yeah.
It's almost like 3D. It only stops you from going out the edge of the map, like, a long way away. Whereas now it's like, oh, the player is only 60 square light years by 60 square light years. It's not big enough.
Yeah.
It's just like, fucking people need to wake up. Annoys me.
Go on.
I was just gonna rant more about fucking morons expecting too much out of people, but yeah. Jedi Survivor, decent first entry into the list of six, I think, for us.
Yes, absolutely. Respawn and EA getting it done. What's number two then on this new wrangled rundown?
Arguably the one of the most anticipated sequels for quite a while to the ever successful Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. It was Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Yes, this was a big one arriving. What was that, 12th of May, was it?
It was the 12th of May, yeah.
Well, how did he pluck that off his head, or did he have it written down in front of him?
Well, who knows? We won't let on, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, tis the kingdom. So this was, I forget how long Breath of the Wild was. 2017, if my brain is working. So this was like six years.
Yeah, mad, isn't it? I think the size of Breath of the Wild helped it, because there was literally so much to do on it. And then they did a reasonable job with releasing some DLC for Breath of the Wild that were both pretty expansive as well. So they did a good job of kind of keeping up with that. And like I say, because the initial game was just so huge and there was so much to do on it. Plus, I think it benefits that with the Switch, it was... This is the only... we have got another Switch exclusive on the list. But Switch games are so much more pick up and play for a few minutes. Like, I think it helps a lot of the time. Like, I mean, I know most of the Dimp Boys are playing on TVs, but I'm very much a handheld for my Switch. Yeah. Breath of the Wild, I used to pick up, play for 45 minutes to an hour and then just set it back down. Or like if I had a spare hour on the train or at work or whatever, I'd just pick it up and play it for an hour. And I think that kind of helps the longevity rather than, you know, a lot of these big single player games that like Breath of the Wild would normally be considered if it was on like an Xbox or a PlayStation. You kind of sit down and you have like a good 6 hour session on it and you pump your way through it. So you get to the end of it quite quicker. It took me a long time to complete Breath of the Wild because there was just so much to do.
Yeah.
Just so much to explore and so much to play around with. And
6,000 Kurok seeds to find, even though you actually maxed out well before that.
Yeah, and it's the sat like that 6 years didn't well. I mean, it didn't feel like it at all to me.
No.
And I think,
scary.
Yeah, and I mean, Tears of Kingdom just did for me. It did everything that Breath of the Wild did, just a little bit better. It was a classic Nintendo sequel. In we're not going to reinvent the wheel.
No.
This game is going to be very, very similar to what you know. But we're going to add a couple of bits and pieces in, and we're going to refine a couple of bits and pieces. And the experience that you've enjoyed so much for Breath of the Wild, you will get exactly the same thing again from Tears of the Kingdom. It will just be slightly better, slightly smoother. And I think that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. It's because Breath of the Wild itself was kind of a new formula for Zelda.
Proper
open world. Very physics-based. Whole game, everything's got physics other than like the buildings, the enemies. Yeah, well, Link has the objects, the bombs, everything is tied to a physics engine.
Yeah, the dynamics of it with like fire and the wind and setting stuff. Yep. Like you can, you know, all of that business, which was, whilst they've had sort of little hints of it in previous titles like Skyward Sword, nothing in comparison. Like that was their big selling point, wasn't it? That was the big new thing for Breath of the Wild. So like you say, it was a bit of a change of direction, not massive change of direction, but a little bit for the Zelda series. And like I say, given the popularity of it, it's hard. Like, I mean, I'm imagining that Tears of the Kingdom was probably in production or in development borderline as soon as Breath of the Wild came out. They knew there was going to be a sequel to it.
Yeah, absolutely. They've attempted to enhance the formula with Tears of the Kingdom with this kind of like crafting element and fusing things together. Like you can just make, you know, weird combinations of weapons, for example. But going outside that, you can build like motorized boats.
Yeah.
And do shit. So it's got this really, it's got this layer of crafting and building that hasn't really been around in Zelda, not to this extent. And the clever thing they've done is tied the puzzle solving to that system. So me and you might come up with the same puzzle. We need to get on top of a ledge that we can't reach, for example. And we're never going to build the same contraption or find the same way up there. And in fact, there's probably dozens of ways you can almost cheese the game because of the physics engine to get up there. But actually, you can't really just Google the answer because there is no one answer. Like it really is that open for a lot of the puzzle solving in. I think that's a really clever way of designing it because no two playthroughs for two people is really going to be the same outside of the sort of scripted moments.
Yeah, we saw a lot of that again on online sort of when the game released. There was people who were posting clips of their contraptions and how they'd made a machine that could fly or how they'd how they'd made themselves a catapult which could launch them fucking miles across the map and stuff. It was just like, He was so clever. As like you say, it just made the game a completely different play for it for everyone. Even I've been playing through it, and my wife's been playing through it, and there's so many bits and pieces which we've done, and I'm like, what the fuck's that? And she's like, oh, that's my thing for doing this. Have you not done that? And I'm like, well, yeah, I have, but I didn't fucking do it like that, you weirdo. Like, so yeah, there's been a lot of it's fun in that essence that they're keeping it nice and different, and they've kept it familiar enough to the true Zelda style. You know, still got the shrines, we still got Korok seeds and bits and pieces, but yeah, it was new enough that, and like I say, for me, I started playing Tears of the Kingdom, and then I said, right, I'm going to go back and complete Breath of the Wild again. I'm going to do Breath of the Wild because my wife wanted to play Tears of the Kingdom.
Right, yeah.
So I was like, I'll go back and do Breath of the Wild. You finish that, and then I'll move on to it. And even playing Tears of the Kingdom for a little bit, there's little stuff about like the combat, like Link's recovery, like when you get knocked down, you just get that, you get up that much quicker, and or just that much more naturally.
Yeah.
That when I then went to Breath of the Wild and played it, I was like, God, this feels really slow and clunky in comparison. Like things that when I was playing Tears of the Kingdom, I was like, oh, this feels great. It feels exactly the same as Breath of the Wild, but it didn't. They made a lot of little nuanced changes that really improved upon the combat in the game and like just the general physics of it. It was, it was an impressive step up from them.
Yeah, absolutely. What did the missus think of Tears of the Kingdom then? Because I know she loves Breath of the Wild, completed that about four times, even on that rock hard mode.
Yeah, she did master mode. Yeah,
master mode and all that stuff. Did she find the same joys with Tears of the Kingdom?
Well, she's still going with Tears of the Kingdom. She hasn't completed it yet. She's still, because she's 100, she wants the 100% it, same as she did with Breath of the Wild. So she's, she's enjoying it. I think, because it's a lot more casual for her, like we're way more gamers than she is. She's a lot more casual. She dislikes some of the changes that they made, like with some of the building stuff. It's just an extra level of complication that she didn't really want to have to deal with. Interesting. Yeah, which is surprising. Like, and it's that she's got the same complaint that most people do about fucking weapon durability, you know, all that kind of stuff, and stamina that people hate. But yeah,
you can cook a tomato to increase your stamina.
Exactly. You're halfway up a cliff and you've got your frying pan out just like desperately. But yeah, so she's enjoyed it though. She's still playing it, which I think says enough. Look, just plodding on. She's much like me, plays it only in handheld. She has it by her bedside table and go to bed in the evening, and I'll fall asleep by like 9:15 and she sits there and plays Zelda for like 3 hours. So yeah, she's still enjoying it, and it's one of those ones that does have that. I don't think you have to be amazing at computer games to still be quite good at a Zelda game. Like the combat on it is quite intuitive and quite straightforward. So it's not like a Soulsborne, you know, which is going to be super punishing for the casual.
Devil May Cry, where you've got to learn all these fucking combos.
Yeah, exactly. Nintendo always does that type of stuff well. You know, they keep it fair for everyone and keep people involved who wouldn't necessarily be playing games otherwise.
Yeah. And Tears of the Kingdom was widely or universally praised. 96 on OpenCritic. One of the top two games that scored in 2023. And they seem to... It's become a true sandbox now. Like that, outside of the, you know, the story beats and whatnot, most of the stuff that you see people sharing is them dicking around with it and making all this crazy stuff. And even up until before Tears of the Kingdom came out, like weeks before, I was still seeing like fresh Breath of the Wild videos with the mechanics they had in that, and this has just expanded those possibilities tenfold.
Yeah,
with all the building and crafting. But yeah, I guess if you're not interested in that or find that sort of stuff annoying, mundane, or fiddly, it might not actually resonate with some people. But I think it's a worthwhile enhancement to have, just because it gives you like a complete new layer of things, and we've got the sky planets, we've got the, you know, the underground part as well. So they've added like the world in terms
like
of triple
the size of it. Yeah.
So even more place to go, and obviously with all the secrets and whatnot that are gonna be lurking there for people, trying to 100% that game is gonna be a mammoth task.
Yeah, most definitely.
So we've got this kind of new design of Zelda, this pure open world, this less of a focus on getting unique items for a dungeon, going to said dungeon, completing said dungeon, going to another dungeon. Like, they've changed the design of it. What do we do with this old school design of Zelda? Is it gone for good now? Or do they somehow get reimagined through remakes or remasters? And or do we see new entries that utilise, sort of lean on the old school kind of Zelda traditions? Or are we done now? We're in this open world, bigger, better, crafting, you know, the lot.
I can't see them shifting away from what they've got, because Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom have been so well received. Yeah. I think we'll still see the odd, like, 2D entry on, like, you know, if it's a, you know, like Link's Awakening remake or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I can't imagine them going back. Certainly not in the style of... I think any 3D Zelda that we see will be in this style. I don't think we'll ever see another Ocarina of Time / Majora's Mask style.
No.
Ocarina of Time got remade or remastered on the 3DS.
Yeah.
Didn't it?
Yeah, and I think
did Majora's Mask as well? I don't think it did in the end, did it? So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see something like that at some point, just a remaster maybe.
Yeah.
A part of me hopes they don't, because why spoil it? But yeah, I think this is going to be it for Zelda going forwards. I can't imagine them... until kind of this style gets completely played out, which I think they'll look to do another... I mean, it depends on how long the Switch goes on for, etc., and what the plans are with the Switch 2, whether it's going to be more handheld-y or whether or what. But I think this will be it for the foreseeable, at least for the next, you know, decade or so. We're not going to get much different from what we're dealing with.
Yeah, I think the only way we do is through, like you mentioned, like a resurrection, like a remaster or pseudo remake of something older. I don't see them going building a new ground up experience. If they still had the 3DS as a separate machine,
yeah, maybe.
Then maybe, because we did get that 2D-ish or that top down Zelda. I can't remember what it's called. Link to the Past.
There's been so many, hasn't there? Like,
it was a fresh one they did about 10 years ago, and I was like that because it made sense for it to work on the 3DS.
Yeah, but, exactly that. I can't see it coming for the Switch.
No, I don't. We don't have that anymore. I think, although, you know, one of the other games, not to spoil the list, you know, we've had 3D entries of that, and they've gone back to a 2D entry.
Yeah.
So they're not against doing that, although that particular franchise is, that's kind of always been the way. Whereas Zelda, you know, since it's come out of the 2D space, has always been, you know, 3D type games. And to be fair, they have been fairly different, the games between them. Like you said, you get the Ocarina of Time, the Majora's Mask, which, you know, essentially controls the same, but had a very different design at the time, didn't you?
Yeah.
Majora's Mask, but
yeah, you know, they did release the Majora's Mask actually on 3D.
Okay.
They did a redo of that. So
they're lurking for people. I think most of them, or some of them, are available on that Nintendo Online.
Yeah, whatever it's called.
Yeah. So if you want to play close to old school version, because I played the Ocarina of Time 3DS remaster/remake, and I think the only thing they added was there's a part in there where you can crawl into this like little hole, and it will give you a hint for some of the temples or the dungeons.
Yeah,
show like a little 5 second like clip of things to, I suppose, if you're lost or whatever. But I don't know what else they cleaned up. But
And sorry, I'm just looking at like previous releases and bits and pieces. I think we will see a re-release of the Wind Waker at some point. I think that'll be the, if we see a change in direction, it'll be to do something like the Wind Waker, which is 3D but the cel shaded style and whatever else. I think that will be the only potential.
Can you imagine the internet these days with that? It'll melt down if it goes.
Yeah, back to cel shading.
They won't be happy with that. They did re-release Skyward Sword, didn't they, recently?
Yes.
Like, yeah,
and
Twilight. Anyway.
Well, and Twilight Princess and Skyward,
So they've kind of already done most of them, I guess. Not most of them, but a fair few of them. So maybe
there's so many, aren't there?
Yeah. There is a lot of Zelda games, but they're all... There's not many bad ones, if any.
No,
really, like,
no.
Genuinely bad ones.
Yeah.
So it is a prestigious franchise. And Tears of the Kingdom is just another example of that, of a bloody 96.
And, solid.
Very solid indeed. What we got next, lurking?
Final Fantasy 16, released on the 22nd of June.
Oh, yes, the classic summer game. Final Fantasy 16, the 16th entry. Well, it's actually been more than that, hasn't there? Because you've had 13, 13.2, X, all sorts of shit.
Oh, there must be. I think there's probably been 30 plus by now.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, at least.
Final Fantasy VII being split up into three parts, so that's three extra games coming from one. 16, as with most Final Fantasy games, doesn't have a, it's not the 16th canonical entry, as in they follow a story thread. They are separate entries, and this is another one. A much more, I would say, mature take on the franchise. Blood, swearing, no shagging really. There's the insinuation of it, but no actual, you know, romping really going
no,
on.
Like no penetration.
No, you don't see any of that. And the easy comparison for 16 is that it feels a bit like a Game of Thrones, the game. You know, the setting is almost pure fantasy, whereas, you know, 15 and 7... it's kind of fantasy because you use a sword, but then there's people running around with guns and you're like, well, what? It always is a bit of a disconnect for me, but whatever. 16's not like that. It's kind of set, you know, there's very limited tech. There's magic, which overrides any tech really, because it does some crazy shit.
Yeah.
But it sets out a really detailed and kind of believable world, which is interesting, because Final Fantasy sometimes struggles with that. This particular one, they do a great job of setting the scene and taking time with characters. It will turn off people, like if you don't like watching cutscenes. And
they're not the games for you.
No,
stop,
what you do in Final Fantasy? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And 16 is no different, but it takes a bit more of a mature direction and tells a really, I think, really compelling story. Combat is good. It's probably... I'm fine with it. I don't need super complicated combat. No. In fact, it annoys me because when they start adding layer upon layer and you can't remember what the first layer was. This is very straightforward. It's good fun. You feel powerful. You've got a number of options. There's not really many RPG elements to it. Like, you don't really choose a path necessarily of, like, I want to specialize in this type of magic or this type of damage or this elemental thing. Like, you kind of get points to get everything eventually. So there's no real armor and stuff. You can change your stats very slightly, but it's not like the older games where you kind of think, oh, do I put this amulet on to increase my magic or my raw power? And, you know, you don't have any party control either. There's party members with you. You can direct them to do simple things, but you can't take control of them. They're just there in the background. Yeah. The good thing is they don't die, I don't remember, so they don't cost you. So those things I saw a lot of complaints from like hardcore Final Fantasy people saying it's missing some key elements of the franchise, and I was like, well, whatever, I don't really care. I didn't care. The game itself was fantastic. The one thing that really let it down though was this performance issue.
Well,
and I didn't play this at launch either. I played this probably August time, so a couple of months after it was released. And whilst the game didn't crash, whilst the game didn't have bugs or quest blocking issues, when you're just running around exploring things using that 60 FPS mode, it ran like donkey shit. It really was a struggler. In combat, smooth as silk, but...
bizarre, on it?
What they did is when you hit into a combat scene, it triggers, the music kicks, and the soundtrack on this game is fucking awesome, by the way. It's like, they're all very good Final Fantasy. This is just like incredible. That is an aside. So what it does, when it flicked into combat mode, it would dump the resolution down so that it would keep pace. And you would notice that, most of the time you wouldn't notice it. When you're running around the world, like on a chocobo, and so you aggro a... Yeah. And you're running past them, so it sort of flicks into combat mode and flicks out. You see the picture, the image quality dump, and then come back. So that's the only time really it was an issue. So, but yeah, they didn't do that in the traversal section, so it didn't run very well, which was a shame. But really, outside of that, it was a terrific game. The icon battles, which you get to control these big fuckers now. You know, you'd normally call those in as to finish off the summons. Yeah. Now you can scrap with them. You know, there's plenty of instances where you're given control to do that, and they are the battles in this game, and the bosses, and the set pieces, and how it blends the gameplay and the cinematics. It really is special. Like it's very, very, very good, and not a lot of bad things to say about the side quests. May be a bit sloppy. There's a lot of like one literally you go and pick up rocks from somewhere and bring it back. It's like, bearing in mind it's Final Fantasy and you're the main character of a Final Fantasy game, you're normally
why am I wasting my time?
Yeah, you're normally quite special in some ways. Usually like you've got something that other people haven't had, which is why you're saving the world or whatever you're up to.
Yeah.
And you got people ask you to go and collect rocks. I'm like, well, the world may be crumbling at my feet here, and I'm being asked to do that.
But here's your fucking rocks back.
Yeah. So that is annoying. But there is some good stuff in there. And I think it sets out a really bad precedent, because early on they're quite bad. But as you get further into the game, you start to unlock like companion quests, you know, people that are in and around your base. They are good. They offer some good lore and good story payoffs. But they're not distinguished in any special way. They're not distinguished as companion pests. They're just like side mission, it's called. And I absolutely understand why people in the first 10 hours of the game see what's on offer in the side quests and think, I ain't doing any of those.
Not dealing with that, yeah.
And you don't need to level up either. It's not really a game where you need to grind or anything like that. You can crit path it and you'll be fine. So it's a little bit sloppy there. But on the whole, it's really good in many aspects. It's another version of Final Fantasy, which is where they've been heading to, this real-time action-based combat, leaving behind the turn base or the active time battle system that I think 7 introduced, and mostly pull it off, to be honest. What's your interest in Final Fantasy these days, though? Because I mean, one day you were streaming like Final Fantasy 9 or 13. What was it? You went
10, mate.
10.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm very much a turn based Final Fantasy fan. I've always played the turn-based versions of them, and I enjoyed them massively. I was going to play the Final Fantasy VII remake, but the combat on that had been updated to be more like the newer ones. And I know you could, I think you could switch it back into turn-based mode, but
You can switch on like auto battle. So Cloud, they will do like the real-time actions for you, and you just use the commands like your abilities and spells and stuff like that. But it's still not really turn-based at all.
That's it. See, I'm very much a turn-based fan when it comes. I like turn-based combat on games like this. So the last few, although I played Final Fantasy 15 for a bit, which, by the way, when we're talking about, this came out in 2023, 15 was in 2016.
Whoa.
Like another one that's had a huge gap between, and I know they've had the 7 remake in there, which kind of bridges the gap between them. But it's a long time between entries. It's just they've not been my thing since then. Plus, I don't know. There's something about the newer ones that feels a bit off. My brother played through 15 and absolutely loved it. But
did he like the old ones or not? Or
was he? Yeah, so he played a lot.
He transitioned and was like,
he didn't play them quite as much as I did, I wouldn't say. Like I did. I did like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then missed 11. 11 was online, I wanted to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I did 12 and 13, plus all the like 10-2 and 12-2, 13-2 and whatever else. But I've kind of petered off when they got to be a bit more, I just can't be bothered. Like the combat became more to me like, as we've mentioned before, like a Devil May Cry style almost, where it's like hack and slash rather than like the thinking man's game.
Strategies
As they started to veer away from strategy, I kind of veered away from them. But the thing is, they've still got the same aesthetic. They've still got the same game style. I love the storylines of all of them. Like that's a big selling point, and that's all still there. Like you say, the transitioning of cutscenes into the combat and stuff is absolutely epic. That was something that I always wanted from the earlier iterations. Like you very much knew when you were in a cutscene and then when you weren't in a cutscene.
Pre-rendered, which, like that crowd doesn't look like
exactly.
that.
Yeah, exactly. Like all of a sudden it's like, hang on a minute, who are these characters?
Yeah.
So, yeah, as the series have gone on, I have no doubt that I probably would enjoy it if I got into it. It's just, I don't know. I got such fond memories of it all. I don't really want to go back and spoil stuff. So I'm still playing. Like, I still play Final Fantasy X on the Switch. I'm playing through that again for like the fucking 18th time. So it's maybe one day I might pick some of these up. But I think if I was going to go to one, it would be the 7 remake rather than 15 or 16 again.
Yeah, because 15's open world. This is not open world, but it's lots of open areas. Like, you're going to a zone, there'll be a few things to get on with. You've got fast travel there. And yeah, 7 remake, the original, is quite scaled back. It's quite linear, which I know some people prefer, actually. This if you say that, if you say a game's linear, people start crying and going, oh, it's like, well, you don't, it's fine.
What are you expecting? Yeah, exactly. I mean, that follows on from 7, and 7 was reasonably linear. Like, it felt open world at the time, but it was still encouraging you along a path. Like, you could maybe travel back a bit, but
it's not till like later on, once you're powerful enough, that you'd even dare explore the world map.
Yeah,
get obliterated otherwise.
Just run the risk, don't you?
Yeah, but no, interesting. In Final Fantasy 16, I think, performance issues aside, this is one game that if and when that PS5 Pro comes out, and if and when it comes to PC,
will benefit.
It will benefit massively. And I may even do another playthrough of it, because they've got their DLC packs. I think one's out, and the other one, I think, is at least dated. I don't think it's going to be out when we record this and publish it, but it'll be close. And that'll be some new content for me to go back into and enjoy. I'm a bit annoyed, because the way in which it's structured is those DLCs happen during the main game.
Mm.
So it's not like an epilogue or a continuation at the back end. It's stuff that happened, quote unquote, during Clive, what a fucking protagonist name, by the way, happened during Clive's journey, but wasn't there on my playthrough because I played it too early. I'm like, well, you've got to be a better way of doing that, but that's fairly common. But yeah, I'm looking forward to going back into this and getting a performance boost. And I hope they do a little bit of scrapping around and tweaking, and like tweak it for the PS5 Pro, and obviously for the PC it will be optimized to a certain extent, but as I said, 50% chance that they blow it. Hopefully they make some use of the more powerful console, and obviously the PC is going to be there that you can probably brute force your way through most issues if you've got a decent rig. So it's definitely got a bright future, and one that I'll be going back through one day. 70 hours though is a big commitment to go back through.
It's
but I did do every side quest, so
well,
what do you expect? And I'm playing through Rebirth at the moment.
Expecting them rocks.
I'm 45 hours in. Cool. And on the PS5, there's like a little flag that tells you your main quest progression. 51%. Mm. So another big one.
Well, double that. Yeah.
So that's going to be fun. Again, doing the side stuff, it costs me. But Final Fantasy 16, 88 on Open Critic, and makes it onto our nominees list. What's next? I've completely lost track of what was happening.
August.
You could throw any game out at me and I wouldn't even know.
I wouldn't question it. Skipped along to the 3rd of August when it first arrived on PC was Baldur's Gate 3. Well, is it the 3rd of August or is it fucking 5 years ago, basically?
Well, for that early access phase, didn't it?
The final finished release of Baldur's Gate.
Yes. Yes. Larian Studios, self-published. Undoubtedly this was, well, the original games, I didn't know this until just before the game came out when I was doing some research. This is like BioWare's original sort of projects, 1 and 2. So they went on to do Knights of the Old Republic and obviously Mass Effect, and then crapped themselves. Dragon Age as well, but I don't think they looked as fondly as these ones. So it seemed strange to me that Larian said, right, let's make Baldur's Gate 3, even though we had nothing to do with 1 or 2. The story doesn't really continue on. It's just more of the settings, a few characters, as I understand, that are lurking that old school fans might say, oh, that's Albert from 2 or whatever, but nothing.
Yeah.
You don't need to do it. It's not like a sequel. So I found that a bit of a strange thing, but this was an absolute sensation. 96 on the Open Critic, so matching Tears of the Kingdom. I think it was put above it because it had a slightly higher recommended percentage or something like that. But it's a number one rated game on the Open Critic.
So it's a two now. It's dropped below Tears of the Kingdom.
It's interesting. I saw that a review, it came up the other day saying review today, and it had Baldur's Gate 3. So someone's gone in there and crapped on it.
Yeah, it must have given it an absolute shitter.
Oh, well, but anyway,
hugely well received. Obviously, we knew it was going to do well because, as we mentioned, it's been in early access for, I think it was just reading here, October 2020 that it was initially released. People had their hands on it for best part of 3 years and hugely successful. And it has, so it's based around Dungeons and Dragons, specifically the 5th edition rulebook. And it's funny because this has had a real, I think the game has got to take some amount of the credit for it, but it seems to have revitalized Dungeons and Dragons as well as a role-playing game and as a board game. Like there is a huge amount of people that have started playing the actual physical edition of that. And I think that in no large part it's due to the popularity of Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. It's done some wonders for that. Quite a franchise, that type of gaming and old school tabletop style things, and maybe introduce people to giving it a go that hadn't done it before. And I mean, it reminds me of, because to me this was somewhat, like, the score is not so much unexpected. I mean, it is, it's 96, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's very high. Yeah,
Divinity Original Sin 2, which was Larian's last game, was like a 93. So those that knew and that liked CRPGs, or however you want to categorise this game, knew that Larian had good chops for it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised that it scored highly, but I was completely shocked at how much it kind of... Like Elden Ring, which previously was, I would call, a niche genre-style game, like Dark Souls, Bloodborne. Like, gamers, hardcore gamers knew what it was, probably appreciated it. But... With Baldur's Gate and Elden Ring, they both broke through that, and there's people that I know that have no right to even know what Baldur's Gate 3 is or knew what Elden Ring was, and yet were asking me about these games.
Yeah.
It broke through that kind of barrier, which very few games do outside of, like, the FIFAs and the Call of Duties and the Fortnites and things like that. So we had another one of these, like, and I could never have predicted that for Baldur's Gate 3. Like,
no,
critically and commercially, an absolute slam dunk.
Yeah, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there, that it is what would be considered to be quite a niche game. And, you know, I mean, Final Fantasy, which we've obviously just spoken about, is kind of used to fit into that category. I think with the turn-based piece in Final Fantasy, that was immediately quite a large turn-off for a lot of people. And whilst there was hardcore people like myself that would enjoy it, a lot of people hate turn-based bits and pieces. It's too slow. It just doesn't do what they're not getting what they want out of it.
Yeah.
And so Final Fantasy has veered more into the real-time combat and bits and pieces, and there's still essences of, like, what it was before, but the gameplay and the combat and stuff has veered away. And then this has come back in and gone, no, we're not worried about that. Like, this... that we've got quite a few friends that play Baldur's Gate 3 on a regular basis. And, it's kind of like you dial on, you sit, you take your turn, and then you wait. And then you wait for everyone else. And it's just like, how many games in the world are there that people are willing to, like, to take their turn and then sit and wait for everyone else to take their turn? And then the computer takes their turn. It's just like, it's such a... It normally would appeal to such a small market, like such a small, like, and most people would look at it and go, God, no, I wouldn't touch that with a barge pole.
Yeah.
And yet this borderline unanimously has been met with rave reviews and people, and so many people playing it that I wouldn't have even dreamt would have picked up a game like this.
No.
You got to hand it to them. I know the storytelling side of things was evidently amazing as well, because it won a lot of awards at the Golden Joysticks and at the Game Awards, etc., for, like, best story or best narrative and stuff. Like, they've obviously, the fundamentals of the game in terms of the backbone to it are obviously spectacular as well. But yeah, it's done such a good job, as you mentioned, along with, like, some of the Soulsborne games recently, of making them more accessible to everyone, or enticing more people to get involved and play these, because it's just not something that's ever really been... you wouldn't get a casual gamer picking up like an original Final Fantasy VII, for example, or something like that.
No. Yeah, it's kind of strange that in Square Enix's infinite wisdom, there's like, well, people want action games, so we're going to make Final Fantasy into an outright action game, lean right into it, give it all that, and then actually Baldur's Gate comes along and says, well, no, don't need to do that. We've taken another method. And what really impressed me of Baldur's Gate 3 is just the strands and the way the narrative just flows out, and your decisions that you're making have real impact immediately, medium term, long term. Characters respond to everything you do, whether it's, you know, engaging in battle with certain people, killing people, letting people off the hook. They've all got their own biases, and these are your party members and other characters, all got their own biases and preferences. So certain people from certain clans, they're just never going to get on with. So if you show a bit of leniency towards them, they might get the hump with you. They leave your party if you... You know, there's all this stuff in there that, again, in a completely different... a completely different realm, Tears of the Kingdom offered flexibility with solving said puzzle. This offers narrative flexibility and outcomes where, again, unlikely that me and you sit down and play this and end up with the same journey. Now, we might end up on the same mountain at the end or whatever it is, but the journey getting there will have many different twists and turns. And that's something to be applauded, because that stuff is very, very difficult to pull off. And I think that's really... got people in the door and kept them engaged. And one of the things that really helps with that is the animations when you're interacting with these characters is really good. Like facial expressions, the way that they move their arms, they're talking, it feels genuine. The last game I saw do this was Horizon Forbidden West. That has really good character animations when you're just interacting with them, speaking to them. It kind of draws you in. And I don't mean to shit on it, but if you, let's just say, unnamed Bethesda game, like when you speak to people in those games, it zooms in, it's just their little chin moving, like it's completely still. And it's like, it's fine, because that's how things have been. And we're like, if you want these big narrative flexibilities in these quests, that's the compromise you have to make. Whereas Baldur's Gate comes along and says, he don't need to make the compromise. We can make this aesthetically pleasing and draw you in with really well-directed animation and character interaction whilst having that complete depth and narrative choice that other games have offered you but not presented as well. So, I mean, nothing more to say than hats off to Larian.
Yeah, and they've obviously got a proven track record, as you mentioned, with Divinity and Divinity 2. They knew that the kind of the fundamental... baseline of the game that they had worked with, like I say, with the D&D 5e rules, etc. But I think we all knew it was going to be good. Yeah. I don't think many people would have predicted it to have come across as well as it did. So yeah, tip of my cap.
Yeah, it was destined to be a great niche game that if you liked CRPGs of the past and their past games, you'll love this one. But people that hadn't played one probably won't even give it a second look. Completely and utterly now has established itself. And now people are like, well, what are Larian going to do next? And they've said, we're probably not going to do any expansions for this. We're going to do a new franchise. And they've built that cachet where they can go off and do this. They don't need to lean on Baldur's Gate 4. Or they can just come up with Larian's next game is going to be this. And people will be like,
people will be all over it. Yeah.
Just like the FromSoft. So... good news story, great news story, and Baldur's Gate rightfully earning its place, winning, basically cleaning up at the actual critical awards and the industry awards. So I think it's one away from doing the quad, which even Elden Ring couldn't manage. So
outrageous, isn't it?
See if it gets it. Might have even already been come out by the time this drops. BAFTA's being slow. Anyway, we'll be on the penultimate one. Lost track.
Penultimate. In at number five. 27th of October, so a couple of months skip forwards.
Yeah.
We move to survival horror game, Alan Wake 2.
Dun, dun, dun.
Remedy Entertainment.
Yes. Published by Epic. So it's only on their Epic store, which really got people's backs
really up. Fucking annoying, that is.
I get it, but also my view is that I'm not sure this game would have got made if someone like Epic didn't basically buy it outright and fund it. And at that point, it's like, Do you expect Half-Life to ever be on the Epic Store? No, because Steam and Valve make it. They're not going to put their own games on there. So the game exists. That's all that matters to me. And, survival horror. Remedy, I liked Control, but didn't love it. I even replayed it last year, kind of in preparation for this, but then it didn't, the timing didn't work out, and it delayed me getting towards to Alan Wake 2.
Mm.
But I went through it again. I was like, it's really good, but I thought it was going to be greatness, and I just didn't feel that.
Yeah.
And then I look back at like the original Alan Wake, what was that, 2010?
Yeah.
It's like 13 years. Mad. I was kind of like, what are we doing?
Well, they remastered it, didn't they?
They remastered it, yeah, in 2021.
Did you play that? Or?
No, I didn't. I just knew they weren't going to. It was fine. Like, it really wasn't that good in the end. So it wasn't. The original Alan Wake for me wasn't that good. It was, like, interesting. But
yeah,
I remember playing through it on the 360 and thinking, yeah, this isn't true greatness. It was, like, worth the time, but I wasn't anticipating Alan Wake 2 and thinking, cool, this is going to be a real, you know,
wonder
gem.
Yeah.
But to be fair, once I saw what they were doing with 2, I was like, Remedy are always a bit weird. They do some really weird things. And the main pull of this one is this kind of dual protagonist type thing where you play as Alan Wake, because the game's called Alan Wake 2, and then Saga, who's like an FBI agent, which is a bit strange because you're playing as another character who's not the title of the game, but it doesn't matter. It kind of works. And they're separated into two different realms, and there's crossover and all that good stuff. And I thought, that sounds like that could be interesting.
Yeah.
But diving into the game, I was late to get into it. It wasn't until sort of like Christmas time when I really decided to jump into it. And from the moment I kind of started it, I was immediately like hooked on it. It really... Survival horror is a bit of a... And this isn't complete survival horror, but I think you have to be a fan of it to really appreciate and enjoy it. But
yeah,
rather than it taking like the shortcuts that most survival horrors do and have like the worst story with the worst payoffs with the shittiest fucking characters, this is like a proper narratively driven video game with a survival horror setting, which we just don't really get. I mean, The Last of Us Part 1 and 2 are probably the closest you get. And there's an argument to whether they're survival horror. But it really is kind of close to that level on the narrative front. And I don't. That's not hyperbole. I really think this is maybe not at the head of the table with the Naughty Dogs, but not far behind.
Not far off.
It's very different. It's very zany at times. But the characters and the story, the twists, the turns. 28 hours I spent on this. So again, it's not super a Dead long. Space 10-hour job done,
but not like a one sessioner, but at the same time not got the 70-80 hours that you get out of certain other games.
No, absolutely not. And a real meaty experience, and really impressed. The game looks great, the game runs pretty well, the acting, the cast, the soundtrack, the atmosphere, really that's what they got right, is just the sound design. Headphones on, dark room. Absolutely perfect environment to play the game, and it really sucked me in. And I was just really impressed with almost every asset of the game. Like the fact they've done this dual protagonist type thing and pulled it off.
Mm.
Again, we talk about flexibility in narrative with Baldur's Gate. This has that as well, because you can play it in any order. You can just play through Alan's side of things and then go back and do Saga's side of things and do it as like two separate games almost, or you can just change in between at various points. There's several opportunities to do that, and it all works.
It all comes
together and works no matter what order you play it in, who you start with, who you end with, all that sort of good stuff. And it kind of filters you towards a singular point, as it has to.
Yeah,
but you can go on that journey any way you want, and that is just
for very
to, clever. To actually work.
Yeah, it's the type of thing that explaining it sounds amazing, and you know, there's a lot of games that promise things like this, and you think, wow, that sounds like it's going to be absolutely awesome. Like, what a clever idea. And then it comes to actually putting it into the game or putting it into practice, and it falls flat on its face, and it's just an absolute, you make an absolute pig's ear of it, where you just lose track of where you are, or stuff doesn't make sense, or whatever else.
Yeah. And even like my main analog, or the main comparison I use, is Resident Evil 2 remake, because they did. Mm-hmm. There's two campaigns for that. You can choose Leon or what's her name? Can you remember the woman version of Leon? You can basically choose either one of those as like the main campaign, then you can do like the other person's perspective. But it doesn't fit together. It's not actually narratively sound. Like there's characters in places where they wouldn't be. Things happen in the second playthrough that didn't happen in the first. It's just a remix, basically. So the promise of it being like a true dual protagonist campaign completely just dies. Whereas Alan Wake 2, they absolutely pull it off. And even on the gameplay side of things, it's proper sound. Like, you know, it's survival horror, so it's not skimming around like in Control, flying around with powers and whatnot. It's grounded. It's very restrained with its enemies. There's enough, but there's not loads. It doesn't descend
into... Yeah, but you're not overwhelmed,
It doesn't descend to all-out action constantly. Like, you get, like, under pressure in certain scripted bits now and again, but the gameplay for the most part is very restrained, like two or three enemies at most, but your ammo
is limited
reflects that kind of dread that you've got. And
I think you need that from this style of game, though, this survival horror style of game, because it's exactly that. It builds the dread, doesn't it, of just like the panic of like looking in your gun and realizing, oh shit, I've only got half a magazine of bullets or whatever, and thinking to yourself, god, please don't let there be a flood of things that come at me or whatever. And it all plays into what they've tried to build in it being, as it's advertised, a survival but a horror game. It's meant to make you feel uncomfortable.
Claire Redfield, by the way.
Yes, yeah, Claire. Yeah,
she is. And it's not. It's fair. You've got openish worlds to go and openish zones to go and explore. Obviously, I do that to try and find more ammo usually. And there's optional side bits and pieces in there, side investigations for you to do, which all kind of tie together. It lives in the Remedy sort of extended universe with Control and then other titles.
Quantum Break,
yeah. Although they don't have the rights to Quantum Break because it's a
Microsoft thing. No, it was an odd one, wasn't it? It was in Limbo because it was,
But they reference it, and even there's a character. There's just Sean Ashmore, who plays the main protagonist in Quantum Break. He's in this game as a character, and his name is Tim Break. Quantum Break.
Yeah.
Clever, eh?
Very clever.
I don't think it's supposed to be the same person, but they love doing it. That's the other thing I like about Remedy, is they do just like to just do little nods like that to their previous work.
Little Easter eggs to themselves.
It's stupid, but it's...
It's the type of thing that you spot and then you go, oh, that's quite fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Harmless enough, isn't it?
Really good, and I think sets a bar that I don't think many survival horror games are going to reach in terms of narrative, for a long time.
There's not been many that sort of fit into that genre that have done it really well. Obviously, the Resident Evil games at times have had sort of similar style, but they can start to get a little bit more...
Well, they're just ridiculous. I mean, they're fun. They're ridiculous.
Yeah, they're more action-based, aren't they? They're just, we're going to chuck the world at you at times kind of situations. They're not... They had, like I say, there's been a couple of entries that have been a bit more slower paced and had a bit more dread to them, but this is... There's not a lot of games like this that have been... I mean, I suppose Alien Isolation maybe is kind of...
That's the extreme. Yeah. Just run away and hide.
Yeah. But it's nice to see them doing something that's a little bit different. And it's nice to see a list this year where I think really the genre that kind of conquered the last couple of years of like the big story-driven open world games.
Yeah.
We haven't actually got that many of them this time around. You know, we've got a real...
Well, PlayStation didn't release anything, so...
Yeah, true. We've got a real eclectic mix of games, though, haven't we? And of styles and genres. And it's nice to see something like Alan Wake being recognised for what it's done.
Yeah.
And not following the norms of what people are expecting.
No. It's really good, yeah. Again, unexpected kind of gem for me. Like, I had really no... Just thought, well... No, 13 years after what I would call mediocre game, like why would I even care? But I'm glad I did finally bother, because it was a great way to sort of end last year and start this year. And we've got this DLC coming. They've done a new game plus mode called The Final Draft, which has added some little extra bits of content. So I may well play for it again, go for the platinum on it and get all that. And I think why not give it a bit of time to rest it. But yeah, Alan Wake 2, 89 on OpenCritic, so again, no disgrace.
Nothing to be sniffed at, yeah.
And well praised for those that like those type of games.
Absolutely.
Last one.
Final game on the list, 20th of October.
Here we go.
Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Wonder. I thought it was called Wonderland for some reason in my head when you were about to say that. I was like, no, it is just Wonder.
A side-scrolling Mario game. Well, a 2D side-scrolling Mario game.
This is what I referenced earlier about games going 3D and never going back, but that's not the case with Mario. We're still waiting for Odyssey, bloody sequel of next 3D game. That's clearly going to get binned out to that next Switch at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mario Wonder is going back to the 2D roots. I say it looks gorgeous.
Oh, like, it's an unbelievably good-looking game. But the thing is, this is Nintendo's aesthetic, isn't it? Yeah. This is what Nintendo do well. Bright colours, beautiful landscapes. Not going to win any prizes for having, you know, amazing facial recognition. Was tied in well with the release of the Super Mario Brothers film, which was last year.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I think it was, you know.
It was last year, I think. But, you know, that was drumming up excitement for it, introducing Mario to a younger generation that maybe hadn't seen, like, the last 2D side-scroller was, like, 2012 with Super Mario Brothers U, which was on the Wii U, which no one owned. So, you know, you can't really even count that. So you're looking at maybe 15 years ago since the last proper 2D scrolling game. And then this came out, which is a great introduction for people who have got, you know, younger families who wanted to start playing a game together and, you know, going back to our own childhoods of playing a nice 2D Mario game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what, I mean, a 2D game, you'd be forgiven for thinking, how can they make this even seem fresh?
Yeah, even compete with some of the other bits and pieces that have come out this year. Yeah.
But their new spin with the Wonder Seeds and the other bits and pieces that essentially just completely transform each of the stages and Mario or whoever you're playing as, because you can play as multiple characters and whatnot, we've given different abilities and what they really, again, adds another bit of flexibility for people and something for people to discover on what could have been a very well-designed run-of-the-mill 2D style game. But now you've got this, let's try and find the Wonder Seed that completely fucks the level up and just
puts
me on some sort of acid trip for the next couple of minutes. Like, I wasn't expecting that to be the USP, but I'm glad it was, because it really does pave it's a classic genre and a classic perspective, and this gives it a modern spin almost by introducing all that in there. So, yeah, impressive. Yeah.
Fastest selling Mario game ever. Yeah.
That'll do it.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I think it was, you know, I'm just looking like through the list of Mario games that we've had over the last however long. But, crazy that it came out. And, I didn't really know what to expect of it. I was a bit hesitant going in because, as you say, how much can they really do with a 2D Mario game? You know, especially as, like I say, we've had a couple, maybe like a decade before, that were a bit flat, to say the very least. And we'd had Odyssey that was so great that you're then always a bit hesitant when we go back and we revert to a more familiar but what's considered to be, you know, a semi-played out formula. Yeah. But they did a brilliant job of it. And it just brought everything back that you love about Mario, the sounds, the music, the gameplay style, everything about it. And it's one of those ones that's always going to have a warm place in most people's hearts, I think. It was critically very well received.
Yep.
What did this end up? Yeah, so more than solid. And worthy of a mention, if nothing else, on the list. I don't think it was ever going to be in contention for taking home the title of Game of the Year.
Mm.
And there's a couple of others within the honourable mentions, I must admit, that which we'll come to in a minute, I'm sure, that I thought might have pipped this out. But I have absolutely no qualms with it being on the list as one of the final six.
Yeah, no, an excellent title. And yeah, I mean, the only thing that's really cost for me, and this goes for Tears of the Kingdom and Super Mario Wonder, they're in that same boat, is that I'm kind of sitting here waiting for this Switch 2.
It's
going to be next year now, early next year.
Well, don't exist, mate, according to Nintendo. Fucking
liars.
Liars, and they just admit it at this stage.
Yeah. So I'm kind of waiting for that to come out, because I feel like maybe less so on Mario Wonder, because, you know, it runs perfectly well, but if somehow Tears of the Kingdom can arrive with an enhanced frame rate.
Or a bigger screen.
A bit of because I'll play on the TV as well. So it really, the mud of like something like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom does shine through because the resolutions are quite low. But it would, I feel like if I can just be patient for another year or so, I'll reap the rewards of that. But no Nintendo, it'll have no graphical update at all or any performance update.
Or it actually lowered the resolution to improve performance.
Yes, jumps. Indeed. But yeah, so I'll be waiting to experience both of those on that new Switch. I've just completely binned the Switch now. Like, I've just put it on the side.
I'm absolutely.
Like, there's no point. I'll start again next gen for it.
Yeah, well, this is
the
problem.
They go, no backwards compatibility, by the way. And I go, well.
They're not getting played then. Job done.
Exactly, all that crap I've bought on there.
The wait for them in 10 years when they get released on the fucking Nintendo store.
Yeah, or through a subscription service and have to play Nintendo Online Classics or whatever they've come up with. But that rounds out the six. We've got the Wakes, we've got the Baldur's Gates, we've got the Final Fantasies, the Star Wars, the Wonders, and the Tears of Said Kingdom. We will announce our winner, and we won't labour on the winner when we do announce it. But just to pause for a moment, was this one of? I'm not going to say what the. Was this one of the greatest gaming years ever? I mean,
I think it's right up there. Just literally. So if we come on to talking about while we're in this kind of process of thought, you know, we've picked six games, but arguably there could be another probably 15 that we'd added to this list.
Yeah.
Just looking down my list of honourable mentions. Yeah. We had Metroid Prime Remaster.
Yeah.
Resi 4.
Yeah.
Street Fighter 6.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2.
Yes. Didn't even get a sniff.
Didn't even get so much as a sniff yet. Hi-Fi Rush,
yep.
Which I know a lot of us didn't play, but was hugely popular. I know it's only sort of a DLC, but Valhalla for God of War Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's really good.
Diablo 4.
Yes.
What else was there that was on my... Starfield.
Yep.
Not even so much as a fucking look-in.
Just got slapped down for having... bad character animation, that was it. That's its mention for the whole episode.
Yeah. Hogwarts Legacy.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't really like a full release, but another one that I wanted to make a thing of mentioning was F-Zero 99.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's crazy. Like, that's... I mean, I've just reeled off another however many there, and that's looking at the top scoring games on OpenCritic, at just ones that I liked out of the absolutely insane list of games. So there was 80 games that scored above an 84 on OpenCritic.
Yeah. That's insane.
In 2023. I'm just having a look at that. I mean, to be fair, there was 75 in 2022.
How many 96s were there? There was two of them here.
Yeah, that's it. Like, it was just a really, really good year for gaming. And I think that might have been sort of the fallout from how many games were delayed with COVID and the Russia-Ukraine conflict. You know, a lot of stuff got nudged back from 2022, and 2023 benefited as a consequence. You know, I don't know whether there's any others on your list that I haven't mentioned as to honourable mentions, but it's a lot of big games on there.
Let's have a look. So we've done the Metroids, we've done the Resi 4, Dead Space as well, Hogwarts Legacy, Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat for the fighting game fans, Starfield and Hi-Fi Rush from Xbox, Spider-Man 2 from Sony. Cyberpunk, their comeback being officially completed with the Phantom Liberty expansion. Like that rounds off that strange journey they went on and solidified that as a great game, finally, for people that wanted to dive in there. Unlike the lower end space, and I mean just in terms of price and production and or the indie space, you had Dave the Diver, Dredge, Sea of Stars that came through and done really well. Really, the only letdown for 2023 was probably Lightfall from Destiny 2. That may have been the only blower. I'm sure there are other blowers, but that in itself... sort of as we get to the final shape this
off
summer,
the rails,
I think,
mate, can't be trusted with anything anymore.
Are they gone? Are they?
Well, I mean, the problem they've made now is it's like we've got another, what, 3 months until Final Shape?
Yeah.
June time on it? Yeah.
Delayed, didn't it? It was supposed to be springtime.
Yeah, it's been so long. And there's just nothing to do in the game at the minute. There's nothing to do. They've taken out the light level, so you no longer have to grind pinnacles every single season to stay relevant. And as a consequence, like, there's not really any point in playing at the moment. And I don't know whether they've done that deliberately to make the Final Shape their big comeback. I'm kind of hoping so. Yeah. But, I mean,
taking King moment they want.
Yeah, Lightfall was serious.
Witch Queen. That was only two expansions ago, wasn't it? The Witch Queen. That's got that done very well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just been a bit of an underwhelming performance for Destiny at the minute. And
Sony really paid good money for that $5 billion they spent on Bungie from just
fucking chuffed that. Really, absolutely chuffed that.
They're like 40% below their projections.
Yeah, well, and then they just fucking laid off a load of people as well, and made sure that, oh, if you didn't hate everything that we've done up till now, we're just going to lay off a load of people and make sure you absolutely fucking despise us for the company that we are. Not been a good year for Bungo.
No. Maybe they can complete the comeback with the Final Shape to close out the Dark and Light storyline the way it deserves to, but
I'd like to say, with the amount of delays that we've had, it's not looking promising, is it?
No, it's definitely Turmoil going on there.
At least I've got that fucking collector's edition sat here.
That's so crazy that it's arrived and the game got delayed. So, and because obviously the game isn't included in the collector's edition,
the size of that piece of shit.
So what's in that?
A fucking plastic copy of the tower, basically, with like some little.
They'll probably blow up in the Final Shape.
Yeah,
end it all for everyone.
Fucking absolute toss. Oh, fucking waste. There you go. That's what's doing it. Look.
So the audio viewers or listeners, yeah, there's a little plastic model of the tower.
Tower architectural replica. Vanguard mentor figurines. Mission dossier. Vanguard mission patch, an autograph book, and a code for a fucking emblem. Cheers, game.
And if you weren't going to criticise the Final Shape even further, like some really unfortunate news, but obviously Lance Riddick he's not going to be in it because he passed away, unfortunately. So they're even going to lose like him as
main
iconic
character.
Like, he's always there, standing there at that Vanguard desk or whatever it is.
Not anymore, he ain't.
No, did they say that they're going to replace? I assume they're going to replace him and not like take his character out.
For some reason, and I had a strange feeling that the classic Keith David. Yeah, it's Keith David that's coming in. Of course it is. Of course it's Keith David. As if he hasn't been in everything else enough.
No.
So yeah, Keith David's taking over.
Okay, fair enough. Nothing they can do about that. Obviously, that's unfortunate. That happened with Alan Wake and Max Payne, which is being remade. James McCaffrey, who did Max Payne's voice, and he's in Alan Wake as one of the detectives. He passed away.
Mm-mm.
So future iterations, and he's like iconic voice. Like, he's just like ingrained into my brain from Max Payne.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, unfortunate. So we talk about what a great year it was, and actually, there's that, there were record layoffs in the industry as well.
This is the other thing. The video game industry as a whole, despite the number of great games that have come out, is in absolute shit show of a position at the minute, with so many companies laying people off and reducing the number of staff that they had, that hopefully, you know, this is still just a little bit of fallout from COVID and, like I say, the delays that have been incurred with regards to that, and starting as of next year, the industry starts to pick back up, because, you know, if it carries on as it is, I mean, fuck knows what's going to happen, because it has been absolutely disastrous. There's been, you know, some studios, like 50% of their staff have been laid off. Absolutely horrendous for people.
Goodbye, they said.
Yeah, so be interesting to see what happens. I hope that, you know, we get to, it recovers, and like I say, people find work elsewhere, obviously. Don't want to see anyone out of a job ever. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see, because it could mean the beginning of the end, otherwise. Disaster plans.
Yeah, maybe, Yeah, it's not.
What are we going to do if we haven't got any video games to play? What am I going to fucking
just play Helldivers constantly? That's
yeah, that's
right.
True. Yeah, true.
They've made enough money to fund that studio for about
going.
10 years. So.
Spending it all on servers, mate. It's all going down the drain.
Or flying bugs. Hello. Right.
Hello.
Will that be on 2024's list?
Who knows?
It's got a shot. I'll tell you that much.
Find out in June next year.
Find out in 15 months. We'll get around to it if we're all still alive. Anyway, so let's do the formalities. I don't take too much stead in who actually wins it because my view is that as long as the 6 or the 5 or however many we do for the year is of quality, I'm happy. So the actual winner is not really
arbitrary
to me.
Yeah.
It is a little bit because they're all great games in their own rights, and depending on your preference for a genre, you might just choose one over the other. There's no objectivity here. It's just a selection of what 4 or 5 morons that get to decide the fate of the game of the year in Team Digital. After playing less than half of them, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, everyone puts forward the one game they've played and then we walk away from it.
But in this instance, I would say a bit of a surprise and a turn up for the books is Alan Wake 2 takes the title for 2023 as we record this in 2024 spring. It's one of those years where there wasn't really a consensus. Everyone was completely scattered all over the place. And really one person sort of decided it and didn't vote for their own nomination. And that was it. And it could have gone to any of the other games quite easily. I don't think any of us would have said, oh, that's the wrong decision for any of these 6.
Yeah. I think this is the first time where, as you mentioned, it's largely arbitrary because all the games on this list, I think, are worthy winners. Everyone's put a vote in for whatever they think it is. And then when we've come to the conclusion between us, it's Alan Wake 2, everyone's just gone, good.
Normally there's some level of squabbling.
There's a little bit of squabbling, of, oh, no, why is that one over such and such? But no, this year it's been, I think everyone just nodded their head and said, okay, fair play. Because they're all such strong entries, and as you mentioned, we are a pack of morons. Not everyone plays everything, so it's awesome. I think it's a good, worthy winner. I'm happy that we got the final 6 that we did. I think that's a strong 6.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, there was plenty of others that could have made it and just missed out due to either not being played or not enough of us being played. So can't argue with that. Worthy winner. Well done, Alan Wake.
Yep. And congratulations to Baldur's Gate 3, Final Fantasy 16, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and, of course, The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. Just our favourite 6 from the year of 2023, when in fact there were probably dozens that people could have picked up and played and dropped in there. And all manner of genres covered. And, great year. And I kind of hope 2024 keeps that up. And I guess we'll find out in 12 to 15 months.
That's
might
it.
Come back here and say 2024, one of the worst years ever.
Dreadful. Underachieving.
Fucking hell. We'll see. Anyway, we'll close it down. Hall, thanks for your time. Your annual appearance is very well appreciated by myself and the 6 listeners that tune in every week. So enjoyable to have you on, enjoyable to talk bollocks about some of our favourite games of 2023.
Thank you very much for having me.
No worries. As usual, everybody else, thanks for your time. And ta-da.
This was a DIMP Digital production.